John Fagan, Dr. John Fagan, Health Research Institute, chief scientist, founder, and all-around all-star scientist for natural organic food industry. I've always considered you one of like the secret weapons on the side of the consumer, you know, helping make sure they know what's in their food and how to create a more sustainable food system. So with that preamble, welcome to the checkout. It's great to see you. Thanks for making time for us.
It's a delight to be here, and I'm really looking forward to probing into this new product issue about the what is being called synbio meat, or meat and milk. We're focusing on milk today, but it's an interesting area, let's put it that way.
Oh, that it is. But let's talk about you first, John. Tell us what Health Research Institute does. Tell us a little bit about your background. And I know you're a super humble guy, but why don't you brag a little, at least low-key brag, about some of the things that you've done along the lines of food research?
Yeah, well, I'm a molecular biologist. I spent 8.5 some years at the NIH a couple decades ago, and doing cancer research. And I've been in the more the nonprofit space since then. And what we, though there was a period where we created a company, but our we were one of the early voices in the in terms of the scientists talking about the GMO issue. We started the first laboratory for testing for GMO foods in the U.S., the first in Japan, an early lab in Europe, and we. You know, we trained labs in 17 different countries and helped create transparency for the GMO issue around the world. And I do believe that it made a difference. We more recently have gotten into something really exciting, which is these very powerful, I call it sort of scientific kryptonite, where you get the mass spectral methods of analysis allow you to make the invisible visible, look deeply into foods, for instance.
Well, tell us a bit about what a mass spectrometer is so people don't think you're talking about like woo-woo stuff. I mean, this is science.
Yes, this is like these machines, I call them my laboratory Teslas. These machines, they cost like $750,000 and $500,000, you know. These are the most powerful mass spectrometers that are available out there today. And these are capable of, in one analysis, of in real time, analyzing literally every compound in the sample that you introduce into this machine. So literally from a simple food like wheat, we'll get 1,500 different compounds. And some of them are known, many of them are known to science, but we take this to the boundaries of science because we find many, many compounds, even in something as mundane as wheat, that human beings have not characterized before, that science has not really come to understand yet. So we call that, we're not the originators of this phrase, but we call it nutritional dark matter. Nutritional dark matter. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's intense.
And what we're doing today is taking, we call this full spectrum analysis. There's a fancy scientific name for it, untargeted metabolomics. But we call it full spectrum analysis. And we're going to apply that. We apply it to a wide range of foods and medicinal herbs and all of that, those sorts of things. But today we're going to talk about applying it to a new category within the food industry, which are synbio milk. And it's also this technology is being applied to meat as well. But we're going to be looking today at synbio milk. It's a pretty interesting story. And but we do this for a lot of different purposes. It's useful for discovery. It's, you might say, a discovery technology for discovering new molecules, new medicinal compounds within a substance that's of interest. It's also something that can be used to characterize the nutritional density of a product, we're in the process of completing the development of a whole program for a nutrient density scoring system that will allow you to come down to a number or a handful of numbers that define the nutritional density of a product. So it's really exciting. But we're going to apply it today to Synbio milk-like product.
So what is Synbio? You know, colloquial synthetic biology. What do you mean by that?
By that, I mean genetically engineered food, basically. But what they do is they genetically engineer either a bacterium or a yeast or a fungus cell to produce some protein or some enzyme or some compound that they're interested in. It's been used to make Synbio vanillin and resveratrol and astaxanthin and things like that. But here it's being used to produce cow milk proteins in a yeast or a fungus. It's being used in both of those, evidently. And so, and the idea is once you have milk proteins, you can make something from that that supposedly is milk. And we'll see if it really can be considered milk.
Yeah, and so the industry that's doing this calls it precision fermentation. That's their marketing term for it. So when you're out in the media, and you know, I wrote an article about this a couple years ago about precision fermentation. So synthetic biology is what we all used to call it, but it's I think only now the critics that still call it that because we refuse to embrace the marketing term of precision fermentation, because anybody who makes pickles know you got to be precise anyway and doesn't involve genetic engineering. Mm-hmm. So why don't we just jump right into it? What was the scope of your research? What were the sort of the tools that you used, and you know, what were your findings?
Oh, good. Okay. So maybe a good thing to do would be, I've got a few slides.
Yeah.
And that would maybe illustrate and make it more concrete.
So audio listeners, well, you'll have to dictate that, but for our video, obviously it'll be great for folks to see. So you'll just have to tell us exactly what's on the slides.
Okay. So I need permission. Okay. Now I can, you need to give me permission to share my screen.
We are doing this live online now. I have no idea how to do that.
Okay. If you look at your little green share screen button down there, next to it is a little carrot. Okay. Click on that. It's to the right of the green. Click on that. And it will allow you to share the screen. Allow you to get. Okay. So what we were... The question that this experiment asks is, what is the difference in composition between Synbio milk, we call it Synbio product on this slide, and we also have biodynamic milk and organic milk. And so basically we use the mass spectrometer to measure the amounts of different compounds that are present. And what we see in this first slide is a whole bunch of blue bars. And each of those indicates a compound that was present in the Synbio milk. But notice there are no orange or green bars next to the blue, except for one down here at the end, where you have tiny little hints of orange and green next to a big, tall skyscraper of blue. What this says is that there are something here, we're looking at maybe 15 compounds. These compounds are very abundant in the Synbio milk, but they are literally non-existent in real milk. And what we're going to learn is that these are small compounds, and they include things like down here in the bottom, a fungicide, and some other really weird compounds that...
Yeah, I'm seeing, so I'm reading some of the stuff. I see quinic acid, I see normorphine, I see hesperidin, and then all the way The largest amount is something called convalatoxin. So
Yeah.
I'm seeing a bunch of stuff that doesn't make me feel appetized.
Yeah, okay. So that's the case. So basically there are a lot of things. This is just the beginning of it. I've got several more slides. I won't waste your time going over them.
This is definitely not a waste of time. You tell us what
Yeah.
we're seeing here, because this
These
looks
are
bonkers.
huge, yeah, these are huge amounts of these compounds that are present in synbio milk and not present in real milk. Literally, I counted them. There are 92 different compounds. And these, most of them are so uncommon that we don't even have names for them. And so we can say with good confidence that these compounds have never been part of the human food supply before. And yet they are the predominant small molecules in synbio milk.
What are the amounts? Because I see you've got some numbers on these charts. Like with all all these compounds, you're talking about dozens and dozens of compounds that have never been in the human food supply before. Obviously in very small amounts, and obviously in something that looks, tastes, smells like a milk-like product. What are the amounts of these items, these products in here?
These are the most abundant small molecules. And normally you would have things like fats, and you'd have some carbohydrates, some sugars, all of those things. And there are some of those here in that early slide. But these are compounds that we don't know what they are. But they're in the milk, and they are the most abundant compounds in the milk.
So when you say we don't know what they are, you mean I just need to keep digging into this. These have never been classified and named by science. So are there like analogous molecules? Do we have a sense of like their class, their family, like things that are kind of like them that may have, that we can draw some conclusions of what else they may be like?
That's a good question, and the answer is we don't know. In order to answer those questions, it would be years of laboratory work. In order to ask that to what any one of these compounds is, you would have to isolate that and then carry out several different kinds of spectroscopic analysis on that isolated material. And from that, you may learn about its structure. And then you would do some more chemistry on it. And so, literally, it's more than a life's work to sort through these things. And it's simply mankind has not gotten to that level of detail yet. It's pretty
That is a
shocking.
very epic statement to make.
Yeah. And the key thing here is that normally a food should be, if a food is common in the world and people have been eating it for thousands of years, like milk, real milk, you can consider it, the FDA considers it generally recognized as safe, or GRAS, GRAS. These compounds are not that they have not been part of the human diet. They should not be considered GRAS. And yet, this product, and listen to this. This is the key thing. This product has been put on the market without any safety testing. And your FDA, the FDA that you are paying taxes to have there to watch and make sure your food is safe, look the other way.
You know, I've never really said anything good about the FDA in my career. I'll say that, with confidence. But tell me the process that they use, or lack thereof, that enables products like this to actually get on the shelves or get in the, baskets of consumers.
Right. So this is what's called a novel food product. And the reason it's commercialized in the US first is because we don't have regulations like either Canada or Europe have. Both of them have rules where regulations where if you want to put a novel food product on the market, you have to do safety testing. Initially, you do short term to make sure that it isn't acutely toxic. If it passes that, then you do a medium-term test, and that would be, a few weeks. And then if it passes that, you do a 2-year long-term study feeding that product to rats or mice. Mm. And on that basis, if it passes that, then you can begin to put it on the market. None of that has been done with these products. That's millions of dollars of work. Mm-hmm. And one of the promotional angles that these companies are making is that they're saying to the investors that, you know, we can move this product into the marketplace quickly mm-hmm. because the FDA isn't requiring us to do safety testing on it.
Yeah, and that's something that investors count on because investors want to make a quick return.
Exactly. They want to make a quick return, and that allows them, instead of, you know, that's a literally it's a 2-year process to take it or more to take it through all of that safety testing, probably 3 or 4 years. And that is a big investment, and they're getting something for free if they don't have to do that. And that's what's happening now.
Well, it's a way of externalizing costs. It's a way of these companies pushing the cost of product testing really into the consumer market and making consumers guinea pigs. I mean, it's a pretty common practice when you don't have a strict regulatory body saying you need to pass these high hurdles of safety in order to actually be selling the product to people.
Exactly.
Instead, the people do the testing for you by whether or not they get sick. And then you can't really actually tell whether anything that you're doing is affecting people unless it's really blatant, because it's just getting mixed up into the thousands of other things that are, you know, causing consumer health effects, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look at the way people eat now.
It's like, well, did I get that headache from my lunch, or was it just because my boss yelled at me or something?
You John, know? I hope you're a better boss than that.
I try to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, this is part of the story that now these are all small molecules, things that are like nutritional things, or they should be. That's what these kind of compounds are in food. But there are also proteins. But first, let me show you what you see in real milk. Uh-huh. So here you see that in the Synbio milk, there's not a trace of these compounds. The compounds that are in Synbio milk, there are tiny traces at the most of a few of the compounds that are in Synbio milk. But let's look at real milk. Let's see what we can find. Oops, I'm going the wrong way here. Okay, I'll get there in a second. Okay, so here we have real milk. And here, look at what you're seeing. You're seeing...
Well, you're going to have to tell us what we're seeing, because we're going to have a lot of listeners here that can't see
right,
this.
Yeah. So what we're seeing, this is a bar chart. And what it's showing is that for biodynamic and organic milk, we have orange and green bars. And every compound has substantial amounts of orange and green. But there is no, for out of 8 product or 10 products here, or compounds, there are tiny traces of 2 of them that have blue bars, which mean that those are present in Synbio milk.
So Synbio milk has just a fraction of riboflavin.
Yeah.
But Synbio milk doesn't have all these other types of compounds that are present in organic or biodynamic milk.
Right. And these are in very essential nutrients, you know, like monoglycerides and many other...
Carnitine, yeah.
You know, the carnitine, which is important for energy and everything like that. And there are more. Here's another slide. It's got close to 20 compounds on it. And again, out of those 20 compounds, there are 2 that have blue bars.
So that means there are 2 out of 20 compounds, there are only 2 Synbio products, Synbio ingredients.
Yeah.
Most of these compounds that are in milk, like creatine, adrenosterone, L-carnitine, inosinic acid, choline cation, pantothenic acid, these are in milk, but they're not in the Synbio milk, is what I'm seeing here.
Exactly. That's what you're seeing. And it just goes on. Here's another slide with the same kinds of things. And yeah, there's one compound that is a fatty acid
Well, I want to call something out here, John.
Yeah.
Biodynamic and organic milk have very high alpha tocopherol,
Yes.
which is vitamin E, correct?
Yeah, it is very high.
And Synbio milk has zero. There's nothing.
That's a very good point. It's a really critical point. And it goes on and on this way. And I won't bore you with it
No,
all.
That's amazing. There's literally dozens of relative tests here showing that there are really high amounts of these micronutrients in organic and biodynamic milk that the synthetic biology precision fermentation milk just doesn't have any of, or have very little relative to organic and biodynamic milk. On the other hand, and I'm just summarizing here, the synthetic biology milk has a lot of synthetic compounds, things that have never been found in the human diet that are not present in organic or biodynamic milk.
Yeah, it's really strikingly different that way. And it just shows that this is not like milk. You can't say that this is nutritionally like milk in any way. And so these are the small molecules, but we also looked at the proteins.
Mm-hmm.
What they claim is that they have produced this synbio cow milk in these big fermenters, and then they isolate the proteins from that. They call them whey proteins, and they put that into the milk and into this material that they end up calling milk. And so my question was, well, what's the remember, proteins are made, they're long strings of amino acids linked together. And what we did is ask, is the amino acid composition of the cow's milk and of the synbio milk similar or different? And what we found is that they're vastly different. Now, there is a, what we saw is that there is, that the difference in amino acid composition between authentic versus synbio-like milk is quite different. There is a 38% on average, if you take biodynamic milk, organic milk, and then also conventional milk, you find that all of them have different amino acid compositions than the synbio milk. And on average, the difference is 38%. That's almost half, 50% would be half of the amino acids would be different. Here, something like 80% or 40% are different. And what that says is that the proteins that are being put in the synbio milk are very different from the proteins that are present in real milk. Uh-huh. And here's another we looked at specifically. They say they're putting whey proteins in there. Well, if you look at the two most abundant whey proteins, the amino acid composition of those whey proteins compared to the synbio milk, it's a 57% difference for one of the proteins, over 50%, and a 46% difference for the other. So they're really, really different. And if you look at individual amino acids, there are a couple of them that aren't so different, but there are some of them that are 240 or 186% difference between the synbio milk and the whey proteins. So whether we're looking at small molecules or the proteins themselves, we're seeing huge differences between the synbio milk and the synbio milk-like product and the natural milk proteins. So this is a very big difference. This is just I think that's enough slides at this point, except this one is useful. What I've done is I point out what they're saying about their milk. They basically say that we have precision fermented milk proteins, and put those milk proteins into this product. Now, it sounds like that's 100% milk proteins, cow milk proteins. And that would be like what we see on the right, the left-hand side of this slide, where you have all these golden balls in this container. But actually, what it's like is what we see on the right-hand side, where, yes, you have a few golden balls. There's some whey protein present. But in fact, there are many more blue and green and red balls, which would be proteins from the fungus or the yeast, not from the cow. So what this experiment shows us is that most of the protein that they're putting into this Synbio milk-like product is not milk proteins from cows, but it's fungus and yeast proteins. It's proteins from yeast or fungus. We don't know which, because that's one of their trade secrets. But they claim in their patent that they can use either of those things.
Yeah, from what I remember, one of the companies was using a Saccharomyces yeast that they had found out in the wild and that they had somehow tamed and turned into a laboratory, in vivo yeast. Could you go back one slide, though, John? I want to just narrate what I'm seeing here. So, so one of the things that I noticed was that the amount of whey protein here, this is like the functional use of this type of protein. Like, so folks who want to, drink milk or other milk products for the protein quality, there's a lot of folks who are performance athletes, or if you have kids, and you consider milk a good source of protein. So you're saying that, one of the main reasons why people are buying milk, that this just doesn't have whey protein like milk actually does, that it's primarily fungus or yeast proteins or fungus or yeast compounds that we're not even aware of what they are, because they've never been tested. They're not known to science. They've never really existed in the human diet before.
Yeah.
Both. Can I say something, John? Because I've done hundreds of these interviews now, and I'm in biology. I have a biology degree. I'm not a practicing scientist like you. I'm a parent, and I was the lead buyer for a $5 billion division of Whole Foods for a long time, and I've worked with dozens of other companies. I gotta say, this terrifies me. This terrifies me. And the reason why it terrifies me is I've had my run-ins with the fungal kingdom. We had a huge mold outbreak in our house, and we have to like gut our house because we found multiple kinds of toxic mold spores, toxic mold byproducts, things that the fungal kingdom itself is a really magical, wonderful, but gigantic kingdom. It's larger than the animal and plant kingdom combined. And it's so vastly unknown. I mean, there's all these books coming out about the fungal kingdom lately. And mushrooms are really popular, and people go mushroom hunting. But, on the other hand, like fungus, when you have molds, like they create germ warfare. I mean, they're an incredibly toxic species. And, on the other hand, you have yeast that are, you need them for our diet. But they're also allergens. They could be allergens. People have mold and fungal allergies. And a lot of it is not just around the spores, but it's around the byproducts, like the things that these molds and these yeasts and these fungi, they excrete. So we're essentially milking fungi here.
Exactly.
And we've never milked fungi before.
That's for sure. And the question is, should we be? Is this what we should be feeding our kids or drinking ourselves?
I think a lot of us, myself included, kind of gave them the benefit of the doubt. Well, it can't be worse. It can't be worse than factory farming. Factory farming in terms of the environmental effects, the animal welfare, the animal cruelty, the impact to workers. Yes, a lot of people make their living in factory farming, but it's a really hard job. And there's a lot of, it's a lot of safety issues. It's a brutal workplace. We were giving a lot of benefit of the doubt that at least it's not that. And now I'm like, you know, maybe we were too charitable.
That's really well put, Errol. That's really well put. Because, you know, they've played on the heartstrings of the vegan people. I'm a vegetarian, so I have a lot of those concerns too. But I think it's been exploited a little bit, just a little bit, you know. And I think there are people who have gotten involved with this technology initially because of that concern about animal welfare. But the fact is that it's not, it doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. And if you're worried about the environmental, if you look at there, you have heard probably that, oh, these things are carbon neutral, or they're a way less carbon problem than other foods. But the reality is that many of the carbon footprint calculations have been done starting with the fermentation process and going forward. But where did those things, where did the high fructose corn syrup come from that is the primary energy component that goes into these fermentations?
So are you saying the genetically engineered yeast eat genetically engineered corn?
Exactly. And yeah. A bunch of
why am I not surprised?
And you look at that industrial agriculture and you add that carbon footprint onto what they've been using in their calculations, and suddenly it goes way in the wrong direction. And so we can't even use these sustainability arguments to justify what's being done. It's just doesn't work.
So, John, we got to wrap up. We got maybe 5 minutes left. So maybe give us some of your summary thoughts here. And look, you've been doing this type of testing in the industry for decades. You've been a real leader and pioneer in creating the scientific baseline for product transparency. I mean, you were a leader in non-GMO testing before most of us had even heard of GMOs. Like, you were like, well, now that GMOs are in the market, we better test for them. And so something like this, it feels like you're breaking ahead of the pack, you're a little ahead of the curve. You know, what should people, our listeners, folks who see these videos or, you know, listening to the audio, what should they take away? What should they remember? What should they understand here?
I think the biggest thing to keep in mind is that all of this, you look at it and it's like, human beings can make a really big mess out of something like the food system. And we need to trust Mother Nature and go with what she has developed. You know, her R&D stretches back billions of years. So there's a lot of deep knowledge there that is optimized for life. And so we should be putting our attention on maximizing that and creating an environment that supports that. And so purity of food and simplicity, all of these things are really important. And to, you know, and then of course, along with that comes purity of heart and all of these other things that we need to take care of each other and of our environment and recognize that it's a very, you know, Mother Nature is there. We need to appreciate her for what she's doing. And that makes our food more nourishing as well.
Right on, John. Well, any closing thoughts for this really impactful research, probably one of the most important studies that have come out about new food technology as of yet? Anything else you wanna say for the audience?
I think that's it. We should ask the FDA why they haven't used their resources to at least test require that these things have been tested. It needs to be done, and it should not be delayed, because these things could be causing problems right now.
Thank you, Dr. John Fagan, Health Research Institute. So great to have you on the checkout. Thanks for all the wonderful important and really vital work that you're doing to keep our food supply safe.
Thank you.